Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art opened a new original exhibition a few weeks ago, Museum Confidential. It's unlike anything else in the museum world, which will be on display all the way through May 6th, and will be an evolving exhibition designed to open the doors to viewers to what goes on behind the scenes at an art museum. Look at what goes on display and why. The exhibit offers viewers a chance to participate in a do-it-yourself exhibition to get a sense of how curators choose pieces for shows, an archival look at how objects' histories are determined in a section called Museum Mysteries, and a look at the artworks not usually on view in a section called The Other 95%. The exhibit also features a 7-month residency by artist Andy Doucette. His installation at the intersection of Everywhere will also evolve and morph throughout the course of the show. I'm joined today by Philbrook's new Director of Collections and Exhibitions. Rachel Keith comes to Philbrook after over 10 years at the Kemper Art Museum at Washington University in St. Louis, where she also directed collections and exhibitions there. Museum Confidential is now open at Philbrook and is on display through May 6th. And Rachel Keith joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Rachel Keith, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
You come back to Tulsa and to Philbrook, you're a Tulsa native, at an interesting time for the museum with this Museum Confidential display. And as a new director of collections and exhibitions, this is sort of your wheelhouse. You're really showing off the entire collection of the museum. What has this been like coming into this exhibit?
This has been a really exciting exhibition to work on. From the outset, we have pulled together, first of all, we pulled the entire curatorial team together to work on this, and we brought in education staff and communication staff as well. So this is one of the first exhibitions that we've done using a new collaborative approach to exhibition planning that Scott Stulen, our new director, and I have been implementing over the past year or so. So we worked as a great big team to put this monster exhibition together. There are nearly 400 objects in the show by the time it closes. And to put that in context, we have roughly 700 objects installed through all the rest of the museum. So that's them in the villa and downtown. So 400 objects in one gallery is really intense. It's a lot of artworks, and it was a big undertaking for our staff.
And I gather this is going to evolve over the course of its 7-month run, right?
Exactly. The exhibition won't look dramatically different at the end, but it will look different in many areas. Works on paper can only be on view for a limited amount of time before light starts to deteriorate the colors. So we limit the
So you have a lot of watercolors in the other 95%. Those
right.
will have to be switched out through the duration of the show, right?
Exactly.
And I think there's about 110 items in this other 95%. And we should explain sort of some of the themes of the show. One of the shows is showing what is not normally shown in a museum, and that's the other 95%.
Right.
Now, of those 110 objects, that's not a 95%. That's, a small fraction.
Exactly.
Are you going to be switching those out through the course of the show?
So a few of the other objects will be swapped out. You may have seen the little villa where we have, there's a small gallery within the gallery where we have some tiny cubicles of tiny objects. So there are about 25 of these cubbies where we've got some of the tiniest objects in our collection. Those individual cubbies will get swapped out periodically. We've got so many of these tiny objects that are really difficult to show without an appropriate context for them. And if you put a tiny basket that's maybe a half inch all the way around into a gallery in the regular museum, it gets lost. It's very hard to show something that tiny, and we've got many of these things that are very small.
How did the museum get so many of these very small objects? Because when I think of a museum, I think of a museum-quality piece as being large.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's got to be up on a wall in a big room.
Exactly, and traditionally, that's really true. It's one of the interesting things about Philbrook is because we started out as a house museum, we have our collection developed in many ways on a more domestic scale than a lot of other museums. Now, that said, we also, our collections plan has changed dramatically over the past, the many decades since 1939. And at different times, we've had different collecting focus. There are many objects that it's important for a museum to collect, even though they won't necessarily be things that we can show very often. A lot of these are very important for study purposes, and a lot of them are interesting enough that it's worth making a context for them. It's worth creating an opportunity to show them for the exact reason that they're not on view as often in other museums.
Now, there is one small tiny object, and it's not really a part of this little tiny object section in the museum, but there is a small object that is a focus of one of your museum mysteries. And this is a bearded man. And it sort of takes you into this is another aspect of the exhibit, which you're taking us into the aspect of how you figure out what your object is, its importance, and do we know the story behind this before we put it up on the walls? How important is that for a museum to know everything about an art object before it goes up?
It's an ideal for museums that we know as much as we possibly can about an object before we put it up on the wall. And in many cases, it's an unrealistic ideal. As technology changes, as scholarship grows, we have increasing opportunities every day to learn more about an object. There are some basic bits of information that we do need to be sure we're clear on before we display an object or before we even bring it into the collection. It's important for us to be sure we know that the object is authentic. It's important for us to know that it came, that it was collected legally, that it wasn't ever stolen or looted. It's important for us to know that it is by the artist we believe it's by. Now, some of those, I mean, the question of authenticity and the question of authorship, they're very complex questions. And I think for a lot of people, the question of is it real or is it a fake is kind of a black and white issue. But in reality, the issue of fake versus real, there's a lot of nuance in between there. There are a lot of gray areas where, something may have been, especially when you're looking at old masterworks, there were paintings where a painting may be an outright forgery. It could have been made by the studio of the master. It could have been a combination of the artist and his workshop. And there's such a huge range there.
You know, when I think of contemporary works today, especially people like Jeff Koons and Dale Chihuly, mm-hmm. we may be having these same discussions about whether a glass sculpture is a real Chihuly or it's a workshop Chihuly or Jeff Koons or a workshop Jeff Koons, or because they have teams of assistants that are creating a lot of this work.
Exactly.
And a lot of their work is more conceptual than actual. And it'll be interesting to see what happens 2, 3, 4 centuries down the road when we're looking at our contemporary art. People will be looking at it in the same way.
It is interesting to think about how history will look back on it, because it's absolutely true that art is about ideas. Contemporary art especially is about ideas. And the hand of the artist in contemporary art really has become a totally separate question.
And it's very possible in the Renaissance that those ideals were the same, that the idea of the painting was the important thing. Who did the brushstrokes was not as important.
Isn't that an intriguing idea?
It is. And it was something that came out of this exhibition, Museum mm-hmm. Confidential, which is currently on display at Philbrook Museum of Art. My guest today is the new Director of Collections and Exhibitions, Rachel Keith, who will be in charge of this massive exhibit, which, as she mentioned earlier, it's like four sevenths of the museum is in this one gallery. So we've kind of talked a little bit about some of the things. The other 95% shows off a lot of things that are in the Philbrook collection that you don't show. Museum mysteries are about objects, one of which is not on display. We see a photo of it. It's a Southern Cheyenne headdress. We'll talk about that in a moment. Talk about some of the conditions of art. You have a very large, I think it's Renaissance painting, where you're starting to see the undercoloring and how the artist changed. You can see it showing through in the canvas. There's a do-it-yourself exhibition. You can be your own curator. So it's a lot of different elements in this. Again, it's demystifying the process of a museum and what they show, right?
Exactly.
We'll talk about the do-it-yourself exhibition. This is one of the evolving themes in the show over the course of 7 months. Right now, there's a Thomas Moran, Hiawatha, there's a number of other landscapes in various genres. And then there are three paintings. We're asking people to vote, which is the one that should go along with these other four or five paintings. How's that working out?
Well, the three options that people have to choose from right now are very different from one another. One is almost a photorealist landscape of Cathedral Rock on the west coast of the U.S. It's this ocean scene with giant boulders in the sand, and it's a very large-scale painting. The second one is another kind of photorealist painting with a pair of bird's legs perched on a branch, but there's no bird. There's just a soft, hazy background. And then the third painting is actually a collaged, it looks like a totally abstract blue and green and brown collage. That one actually is, it was a landscape at one point, and then the artist cut up all of the pieces into these fragments and put them back together in a new way. So it's a very different kind of landscape painting. So visitors have the opportunity to look at these three paintings and consider how each one would work with the existing group and vote for the one that they think will work best.
And then what is the process? Will that painting move over into the group and then you'll choose some more to go along with it? Or will it be a whole nother group of paintings down
the
road?
The painting that wins will move over to the core group of paintings, and then we'll bring a whole new set of three paintings out for people to choose from.
It's really interesting. Has the curatorial staff been surprised by what people are going for?
Yes and no. It's the large painting is probably the most impressive of the three, and that seems to be the forerunner right now. In choosing these groups of paintings that will come out over the next several months, we were careful to choose paintings. Any one of them would work, and any one of them will take the exhibition as it grows in an interesting and slightly different direction.
Mm-hmm. And so that's all been planned out over the course of 7 months.
Exactly.
I can't imagine coming into this within the last few months as the planning goes on, because, you know, most of the times an exhibition is for 2 months, it's static. Mm-hmm. This is evolving. Mm-hmm. And I assume you have to have this exhibition mapped out where you want it to go over the course of 7 months.
We do. We have what I'll call a flexible blueprint for the next several months. We're very interested in audience feedback and in making adjustments to the exhibition as we experiment a little bit and we see what works for our visitors and what doesn't work as well. So that's one of the really wonderful opportunities that we don't usually have, because usually an exhibition would only last for 3 or 4 months. So with a run of 7 months, we can invest more in making changes. We have the time to make changes and still to enjoy the benefits of those changes.
My guest today is Rachel Keith, the Director of Collections and Exhibitions at the Philbrook Museum of Art. Their new exhibit, which is pretty innovative. I don't think any museum has done this, where they open the doors to the museum. Museum Confidential is open at the museum. It really tries to explain the process of what goes up on the walls and what the institution is trying to communicate through its collections. And it's on display now all the way through May 6th at the museum. And it's going to run through the whole exhibition, sort of usual exhibition season, this coming year. I want to ask about the artist-in-residence, Andy Doucette. This is one of the first things viewers will see when they come into the gallery. It is a large installation, and Doucette seems to work on these installations which really put you into an environment. In this case, he's chosen a motel lobby, and the name of the piece is At the Intersection of Everywhere. It seems like he was trying to create a site-specific installation. And you see his notes up on the wall and his thought process. And what he came to realize is, in many ways, Tulsa is just like anywhere else. And it's sort of a universality of the community. What has that process been as he's worked with the curatorial staff to sort of create this piece?
Well, Andy made several trips to Tulsa as we were planning the exhibition and his installation. And it was a really interesting collaboration with an artist, because typically when a museum engages an artist to work on a project, it's about that artist and it's about that artist's work. And that was an important part of this installation as well. But we also were asking him to consider the rest of the exhibition and to think very carefully about how his work fits into the rest of the exhibition. And that's a big request to make of an artist, to think about his own work and also all how it fits into this bigger picture. So he spent a lot of time getting to know the Tulsa community, just exploring the different neighborhoods and the areas around Tulsa and talking to lots of people here in the community. And he was especially fascinated with the idea that, at least my husband and I joke about this quite often, and I think it's a recurring conversation in many households, that Tulsa is, it's a little bit southern and it's a little bit Midwestern. It's kind of the Southwest. It's kind of the West. It's this intersection of many places. Culturally, it's this melting pot in many ways. So many parts of the country are, but in Tulsa, it's especially the regional character of the country comes across very clearly here in Tulsa and blends together. So he liked, that's where this title, At the Intersection of Everywhere, came from.
And I think the biggest clue to that is, you know, he has this complete installation of what looks to be a mid-century motel lobby. And up behind the desk, next to the room keys, which there are room keys, he has a map of the United States. And the way he's juxtaposed the map, Tulsa is like right in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a very telling piece. But there's many elements to this installation, isn't there?
Absolutely. There's the motel lobby and the wall that you referenced that includes a lot of his drawings and preparatory material. There's also a library where we have collected encyclopedias from people in the community, and we'll continue to collect various materials that he will then incorporate into the installation over the next several months. We have these mobile platforms that we've designed to, well, these mobile platforms sitting in the gallery space. During the course of the exhibition, we'll move them out to other areas of the museum as well, and they'll serve many different functions. Right now, there's one in the gallery that is covered with lamps. It's an installation of lamps from members of the community.
Yeah, lots of members of the community, and it says, and it presents these lamps, which go from really interesting to very mundane, are presented in the same way you would present an art object from the collection of, you know, whoever donated the lamp.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Andy's really intrigued with the idea of how museums function and how museums are always borrowing paintings and sculptures from other museums. There's a constant back and forth going on all around the country and around the world. And he was interested in this idea of borrowing objects from people's homes and from other institutions as well. And he was especially interested in the idea that when we borrow a lamp, then there's darkness in that spot, and people are going without something that they're used to having in their day-to-day life.
I was intrigued by the library shelf, which is, you know, it has the little ladder that goes up. But what I was intrigued by was the fact that these are all antiquated materials. They're all encyclopedias. Nobody has encyclopedias anymore. We have phones now.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I thought that was a really interesting point. And I'm not sure what the point was he was trying to make in conjunction with the whole installation.
Right.
But I thought it was an interesting point. Okay, we're going to create a library, but we're going to create a library with materials that most of us don't use anymore because we've found easier, quicker ways to get the information we need from those books.
Mm-hmm. You've really hit on it, Rich. That's this idea of antiquated resources. And one of the other materials that he's interested in collecting through the course of the show will be slides, which are another obsolete material that used to be such popular ways of sharing your pictures, and now we have social media and don't need slides anymore.
Now, one of the things about this exhibit, this goes far beyond what's in the Helmreich Gallery. It's really opening up the museum in a lot of different ways. You're encouraging repeat visitors, and you're actually having some incentives for people to repeat their visits. And that means going behind the scenes, going into the archives, doing all sorts of things. Can you talk about some of the special opportunities that are going to pop up through the course of the exhibition that you can talk about now? Because I know some of them are surprises.
Sure, sure. There will be a lot of pop-up events. Some of the opportunities will include chances to watch a conservator at work. We'll have conservators in to work on some of the sculptures outdoors, as well as some artwork within the building. And people will be able to see them at work and ask questions as the conservators are working. We'll have opportunities for Skype visits behind the scenes at other museums all around the world. So people will be able to come into Philbrook and watch a video and talk live with people at other institutions. And we will have...
You'll have chances to go into your own archives, right?
For select people. Who, yes, exactly. With 25 visits, you can you can win. Again, that's over nearly 7 months. So
right.
With 25 visits over nearly 7 months, visitors can choose from several really fun opportunities. One is a night at the museum, so that's a chance to spend the night inside Philbrook. One is a behind-the-scenes tour, a chance to look into art storage with us.
I know one of the things this exhibit has allowed the curators to do is go completely through your collection. Have there been any major finds of materials that have been sitting back there and saying, why don't we show this more often?
Definitely. It's amazing how many paintings, you know, when you look at them on a rack in storage, just don't look very impressive. And when you pull them out and put them on the wall, they hold up a lot better. So there have been many of those kinds of surprises.
Now, I have to tell you, looking at the 95%, they're very interesting paintings, but I understand why they're not shown for the most part. There are some that I really understand why they're not shown. Others are, they're okay, but compared to the normal collection that is out, you understand why that one's put away and
yes.
Why the other one is shown.
Yes, exactly.
But I assume you've had a few reassessments during the course of this examination.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been good for the institution?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, there's a range of material on the wall in the 95%, to be sure. And it's true that museums we want to show the very best of the best. And so that's what's up on our walls on a daily basis. But we do have a lot of works in storage that are still very important works for us. When we're telling a certain story, sometimes you need exactly that painting to be able to tell that story. So sometimes they're important to us for study purposes. Sometimes they're important from more of a historical perspective. But putting all of those paintings out on full display is something that it's really unheard of for museums to bear all in that way. We're in the early stages of planning a reinstallation, though, of our collection. And that's an opportunity for us to re-examine and reconsider our collection from the ground up. You've been in Tulsa for many years and know that Philbrook's galleries have been relatively...
Stable,
yes.
In what they show.
Exactly. And so we're looking at a really pretty dramatic reinstallation. So digging into our collection and into the things that we get so used to, the things that are on the walls, and we take them for granted in a certain way, as obviously these are the very best things that we have, and finding opportunities to show objects that have not been up for many decades but are still really fascinating objects means we can tell different stories with the collection. It means we can show more diversity from the collection, and it means there's always something fresh to see.
You mentioned that most of the objects are in the main gallery, but it sounds like there are things that have spread from the main gallery through the rest of the museum. Are there examples of that, or will that come later through the course of the exhibition?
That's something that will come starting in November through the rest of the exhibition. There will be a new exhibition of some of our best drawings from the collection will be installed in November in our Spotlight Gallery, and we'll begin... I've mentioned that some of Andy's works also will begin to make their way through the rest of the museum. And towards 2018, we'll start to install other works as part of the reinstallation as well.
Mm. Now, when you put that installation that's in the main gallery and move it through the rest of the museum, how's that spotlight what's already there in, say, a given room or gallery? When you take parts of the installation that have been in the main gallery and then move them into other galleries in the museum, does it make you look at the art within that room in a different way?
It's a good question. I mean, when we do the reinstallation, we are starting totally from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be, with only a few exceptions, there will be all new art in the room. Now, the Kress galleries are one of those exceptions. And there, I think we will introduce some new artworks into that space. And we will see the artworks there in a different way because of those new introductions, absolutely. I'm not sure there are very many objects in Museum Confidential right now that we will pull out into the rest of the museum.
Oh, okay. I was thinking
maybe part of.
I thought that was one of the things, was that part of the installation would be going to other parts of the museum.
So, yes, in a very strange way. One of the things that has not yet gone up in Helmerich Gallery is, you may have noticed when you were there, there was a platform with wallpaper on it, and there was nothing on the wallpaper.
Yes.
So just a blank wall. That platform soon will have a painting of a seascape, but the painting will rock back and forth like you're on a boat. So the platform won't move, but the painting will move. And it will be in the Helmerich Gallery for a while, and then that platform will move around to other parts of the museum.
Okay. All right.
So there are some of these platforms will begin to make appearances through the rest of the space.
My guest today is Rachel Keith, the Director of Collections and Exhibitions at the Philbrook Museum of Art. Museum Confidential is a season-long exhibition will be on display through May 6th, and an evolving exhibition which sort of is designed to highlight the process of how a museum puts art on its walls and the decisions it makes. It's a really interesting exhibit. And I assume you're getting lots of feedback from your viewers. What's been most interesting from the feedback so far?
We've been excited to have such positive feedback from visitors so far. And a lot of people, one of the things that's been really fun for me is how many people remember some of these paintings from long ago. They're paintings that haven't been up in many years, but they're paintings that are still familiar to many of our longtime visitors. We've had several visitors say that it's the best exhibition they've seen at Philbrook in many years. So that's always exciting to hear.
What's been the reaction from the museum world? Because as far as I know, no museum has really tried to open up their processes like this to the public. Has this spurred other museums to maybe think about doing something like this?
Not yet, but I expect that it will. We've been talking a little bit as a staff about how this exhibition might be translated to other museums as well. It's interesting to think about this show as a conceptual framework that could travel to other institutions without an actual object traveling ever. And that's pretty unusual for a museum exhibition.
Yeah. Well, people can see Museum Confidential all fall and all spring and winter at Philbrook and see how it changes over the course of months. Rachel, welcome back to Tulsa, and thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Rachel Keith is the Director of Collections and Exhibitions at the Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook presents Museum Confidential now on display through May 6th at the museum. By the way, you can also listen to the Museum Confidential podcast at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. For details on the exhibit, visit philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.